Good day. Welcome to another episode of the Audible Local Ledger Reads to the Blind podcast. You can get more information at audiblelocalledger.org. Stay tuned for today's reading.
Hello, everyone. This is Carolyn reading to you from the Cape Cod Times on Wednesday, April 3rd. As always, we'll start today with the local weather. Today will be an increasingly windy day with rain in the afternoon. Highs will be 44 degrees. Tonight, lows will be 40 degrees. Winds will be becoming strong. There will be rain. Some of it will be heavy. Tomorrow, on Thursday, April 4th, we'll see highs of 47 degrees and lows of 37 degrees. It will be a cloudy day with wind and rain tapering off. Friday will also be a mostly cloudy and breezy day with perhaps a shower. Highs will be 46 degrees and lows 37 degrees. Saturday will also be variably cloudy with a shower in some places. Highs 43 degrees and lows 36 degrees. And finally, on Sunday, we will see some morning flurries with clouds and sun later in the day. It will be breezy. Highs of 44 degrees, lows of 37 degrees. And next, in other local news, we'll go to the lottery. The numbers game for yesterday, Tuesday, April 2nd, at the midday drawing were 9, 4, 3, 6. Again, that's 9, 4, 3, and 6. The numbers for the evening drawing for yesterday, Tuesday, April 2nd, were 4, 2, 1, 6. Again, that is 4, 2, 1, 6. The mass cash numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April 2nd. Those numbers were 12, 13, 15, 17, and 26. The Mega Millions numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April 2nd, were 10, 50, 56, 60, 66, with a bonus number of 19. And finally, the Lucky for Life numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April 2nd. Those numbers were 6, 8, 17, 22, 31, the Lucky Ball of 13. If you played any of these games, we wish you the best of luck. And now we'll go to our local story on the front page of today's Cape Cod Times. That story is entitled Dream Job. Park Service seeks bids to run Highland Links Golf Course in Truro. By Eric Williams, Cape Cod Times, USA Today Network. The course is generally considered to be one of the oldest on the Cape. According to a Park Service historical account, the original design of the 1898 Highland Golf Links recalled the ancestral courses of the Scottish Highlands. Rolling landforms, views to the ocean, and naturally occurring hazards influenced the sighting of holes. In an email to the Cape Cod Times, Lindsay French, visual information specialist at the Cape Cod National Seashore, wrote that the current concessions contract is expiring and is being re-advertised by the Park Service. According to a release from the seashore, the new contract is expected to begin January 1st, 2025. In 2014, Johnson Golf Management Incorporated was awarded a 10-year contract by the Park Service to run Highland Links. Previously, the town of Truro had run the golf course for more than 50 years. Jason Laramie, business manager for Johnson Golf Management Incorporated, said the company plans to submit a proposal for the next concessions contract. Highland Links is a very historic and special place, and we are fortunate to have been stewards for the last 10 years, said Laramie. Despite the relatively short length of the course, Laramie said, Highland Links can be a challenging place to play because of strong winds, tall fescue, and clever design of the holes. It's not for the faint of heart, he said with a laugh. The Park Service is hosting a site visit at Highland Links on April 9th for those interested in running the course. According to the park, each interested offerer is limited to 5 persons attending the site visit, and all attendees must be 18 years or older. Interested parties should register for the site visit by April 5th, sending an email to Katie Trudeau at kathleen-trudeau@nps.gov. More information about the concessions opportunity is available at nps.gov/caco/learn/news/index.htm. Our next local story is entitled Provincetown Voters OK Redo of Sports Field by Eric Williams, Cape Cod Times, USA Today Network. An $11.7 million plan to redevelop Mauda Field in Provincetown was approved by voters at Provincetown's annual town meeting on Monday night. The appropriation is contingent on a proposition 2.5 debt exclusion vote at the 2024 annual town meeting on May 14th. Speaking from town meeting floor, resident Dennis Minsky said he initially had trouble coming to terms with the price tag, but ended up in favor of the project because of the benefits it offered. I love this town, and I want to believe in the future of this town, said Minsky, who seemed to indicate the improved sports field might help ramp up his fitness regime. I'm resolved to use the damn thing, he said. I just hope there are enough benches. According to the town, the, quote, debt exclusion override would add approximately $181 per year over 15 years to the median property tax bill. The town has applied for and expects to receive grants to offset some of this cost. The main design elements of the plan include a 400-meter track, regulation soccer and little league fields, a skate park, shuffleboard and bocce courts, outdoor exercise equipment, pickleball and tennis courts, and a community plaza for gatherings. A park support building would house a concession stand and public restrooms. Voters reject fire department charter amendment article. Voters rejected a charter amendment article that would have changed the way a fire chief is appointed for the town. The article would have given the town manager the responsibility for appointing a fire chief. Currently, the town charter calls for the Board of Fire Engineers to elect a chief from its membership, a methodology that will stay in place. Residency requirements for police and fire chiefs. Voters approved a charter amendment article that would allow the police chief and director of public works to reside within 45 driving miles of Provincetown within 6 months of assuming office, and would allow the town's fire chief to be a resident of Provincetown, Truro, or Wellfleet within 6 months of assuming office. Passage of the article authorizes the town's select board to petition the state legislature for the charter change. Currently, the town charter calls for the police chief and director of public works to become residents of Provincetown or Truro within 6 months of assuming office, and calls for the fire chief to become a resident of Provincetown within 6 months of assuming office. According to the explanation of the article in the warrant, the article would give the town greater flexibility when looking to hire new police and fire chiefs once the current chiefs retire. And there's a picture on the front page accompanying this last story. The picture is of Town Hall, and the caption reads, "Voters arrive Monday evening at the town hall in Provincetown for the annual town meeting." Our next local story on the front page of today's Cape Cod Times is entitled, "26 Surplus Police Shotguns in Falmouth Set to be Destroyed," by Rachel Devaney, Cape Cod Times, USA Today Network. Falmouth Town Manager Michael Renshaw announced Monday that 26 surplus shotguns owned by the police department will be destroyed rather than used as trade-ins for future department gun purchases. The department is making arrangements with the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory in Maynard to schedule the complete destruction of all the shotguns, Renshaw said in an email to the Times. There will be no cost to the town for the service, and the date will likely be in April or early May, Renshaw said. Renshaw made the announcement at the select board meeting. The decision comes after lengthy debate over the fate of police-issued 12-gauge surplus shotguns that the Falmouth Gun Safety Coalition wants to see destroyed. The coalition members worry the surplus weapons could undermine public safety if they end up on the streets. The town had initially said 33 police department surplus shotguns were to be disposed of. The figure 26 was discussed at a March 25th meeting and on Monday. As part of a deal to purchase new shotguns, the surplus guns could have a $4,100 trade-in value if they are sold back to Jurek Brothers, a police supply vendor in Greenfield. Town officials, including Renshaw and Police Chief Jeffrey Lurie, have been concerned about continued trade-in value losses if surplus weapons are destroyed. Lurie told the Times that roughly 100 police-issued handguns will also need to be replaced by July. Change in existing firearm disposal policy. At a March 25th select board meeting, Renshaw revealed changes to the existing firearm disposal policy. The policy now requires that the town establish and maintain a donation account that can offset costs associated with the destruction of surplus firearms. The new policy will be subject to all laws, bylaws, and regulations pertaining to the donation of gifts to the town. Town Council Maura O'Keefe said the policy, quote, isn't set in stone, end quote. This is new. This is unique. There is no case law on this, and there's no guidance from the IG's or Office of the Inspector General's office, said O'Keefe during the March 25th Select Board meeting. We are just trying to figure it out. Four Select Board members voted in favor of the newly drafted policy. Select Board member Robert Mascali abstained from the vote. Should residents be financially responsible for gun destruction? In February 2022, Renshaw was directed by the Select Board to conduct research on whether a fund could be created to, quote, counterbalance or offset the trade-in value to a gun dealer, end quote. Since then, Renshaw spoke with Director of Finance Ed Centeo and Town Accountant Victoria Rose, asking for assessments and recommendations on effective accounting structures, he said. They both recommended creating a donation account, and the use of any funds donated would specifically be restricted to offsetting any financial loss to the town incurred because of surplus property, said Renshaw. During the March 25th Select Board meeting, Assistant Town Manager Peter Johnson-Staub said donations won't guarantee the destruction of surplus weapons. However, we can ensure that those funds will be used for no other purpose than to destroy weapons, he said. The coalition wants to see all surplus police weapons destroyed at no cost to Falmouth residents. Logan said there was no mention, no concern, no insistence of any contributions of money when the policy was originally passed at the May 2022 town meeting. During the March 25th meeting, Select Board member Anyale Scott-Price wondered whether Renshaw would be required to report back to the Select Board on decisions surrounding surplus weapons. O'Keefe said the town manager's function is founded on principles of procurement and is based on language in the town charter. The Select Board has created this policy, but because of the charter, you have to give authority to the town manager to carry through, said O'Keefe. There are certain lines that can't be crossed, said Select Board member Douglas Brown. Renshaw said he has no plans to report back to the Select Board on an annual basis regarding surplus weapons, but said he plans to be transparent. Within 30 days, he said, A posting will be added to the town website that reports fair market value for the surplus shotguns, he said. And now, to continue with other local news, we'll go to the Cape and Islands page. There's a picture at the top of the Cape and Islands page, which is entitled Sailing into History. The picture is of a large ship, and the caption reads, "The T.S. Kennedy sits at her home port at Massachusetts Maritime Academy in Buzzards Bay, still wearing the logo from its latest trip used by Texas A&M Maritime. The ship arrived back in Buzzards Bay after a six-day voyage from Galveston, Texas. It is now getting ready for its last voyage for Massachusetts Maritime Academy, while work continues on the pier, getting ready for the arrival of the school's new training ship this summer." And the top local story on today's Cape and Islands page is entitled, "Three Running So Far for Barnstable Regional Commission," by Walker Armstrong, Cape Cod Times, USA Today Network. The Barnstable County Board of Regional Commissioners, made up of three elected officials, will hold elections for two seats this year. The primary election is September 3rd, and the general election is November 5th. The deadline to register to vote, update your voter registration, or change your party is 10 days before any election or town meeting. As of March 14th, the two incumbents running for the county commission seats are Democrat Mark Forrest of Yarmouth and Democrat Sheila Lyons of Wellfleet. Republican Ron Beatty of West Barnstable, a former county commissioner, has announced he's running as well. The third seat of the Barnstable County Board of Regional Commissioners is up for re-election in 2026 and is currently held by Ronald Bergstrom. What were the issues in the last election? Seeing the county through the COVID-19 pandemic was a concern with voters for in the 2020 county commission race. So too was knowledge of Cape Cod, an ability to set and achieve goals, experience, knowledge of science and the region's environment, and fiscal conservatism. Water supply protection, wastewater planning, affordable housing, homelessness, addiction, and climate change were also among the issues mentioned by candidates. In the 2022 election, candidates campaigned on cost-effective government services, the threat to the Cape's environment and wastewater management, transparency and fiscal sanity, and improved cooperation with the Barnstable County Assembly of Delegates. What towns or areas does this seat cover? These seats are at large, covering all of Cape Cod. What does the person elected to this seat do? County commissioners oversee and supervise county departments and county services, also managing the county budget and allocating funds to various Cape towns. How much does it pay? The annual salary is $15,000. How often reelected? Each seat is up for reelection every 4 years. Who are the incumbents? Mark Forrest and Sheila Lyons are the incumbents in the 2024 race. So far, who has filed papers to run for the job or seek re-election? How much money do they have in their campaign so far? As of March 14th, Mark Forrest, Sheila Lyons, and Ron Beatty have all said they are running for the Barnstable County Board of Regional Commissioners seats. According to the State Office of Campaign Finance, Forrest has $1,565.91 in his campaign. Lyons has $7,700.27 in her campaign. And Beatty has $20 in his campaign. The next local story on the Cape and Islands page is entitled Zoning Leniency Obligation Raised for Proposed Family Shelter by Zane Razak, Cape Cod Times, USA Today Network. The Planning Board will hear more about the Housing Assistance Corporation proposal to turn the former South Dennis healthcare facility at One Love Lane into a family transition shelter on May 6th. The board decided to continue the matter until that date after a Monday night meeting at Town Hall. The housing agency wants to use the 57,000 square foot site to house up to 79 families, consolidating its three family shelters in Barnstable, Falmouth, and Bourne. The redevelopment of the South Dennis property is part of the agency's multi-year strategic plan to address housing insecurity across the region, according to the nonprofit. The goal is to open the new South Dennis shelter by the end of the year. Dover Amendment. Housing Assistance Corporation wants the project to be allowed by right under a state law known as the Dover Amendment because of the educational services they plan to provide. The Dover Amendment, initially adopted in 1950, mandates that proposed religious and educational land uses be given more favorable treatment than other proposed uses, such as residential, commercial, or industrial, under local zoning ordinances and bylaws, according to the Massachusetts Interlocal Insurance Association, an interlocal service of the Massachusetts Municipal Association. The use of zoning exemptions offered under the Dover Amendment has also been raised with a pending purchase by Riverview School, a private East Sandwich school for students with disabilities, of the 40-acre Twin Brooks Golf Course on Scudder Avenue in Hyannis. Dennis Town Planner Paul Foley said the proposal appears to be protected from zoning restrictions under the Dover Amendment, but the town could look into, quote, reasonable regulations, end quote. If it is Dover Amendment exempt use, which it likely is, we cannot restrict, we cannot say no, said Foley during the planning board meeting on Monday. We can just try to make it as good as we can and make sure we're all on the same page. We're going to pause this story now and go to the obituaries. We'll continue this story at the conclusion of the obituaries. And now, in other local news, we will go to the obituaries. Chatham, Edward Joseph MacDonald, Jr. Edward Joseph MacDonald, Jr., affectionately known as Ted, passed away peacefully on Easter Sunday, March 31st, 2024. He was surrounded by his wife, Catherine, or Kathy, of 60 years, and his loving family. Ted was a loyal patriot who served his country proudly for 7 years in the National Guard and for over 10 years as a crew member and flotilla staff officer, human resources for the Chatham, Massachusetts flotilla of the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. He held positions in several community organizations, including chairman of the board for the Northeast region of the American Heart Association, chairman of the Barnstable County Service Corps of Retired Executives, or SCORE, and member of the board of the directors for the Chatham Chamber of Commerce. Services will be held at Our Lady of Grace Church in Chatham, Massachusetts, on Saturday, April 6th, 2024, and will include visitation hours from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., followed by a funeral mass from 12 to 1 p.m. In place of flowers, donations can be made in Ted's honor to the U.S. Coast Guard 36500 Restoration Program at www.orleanshistoricalsociety.org/CG3500-lifeboat-house-project or the American Heart Association at www.heart.org and the Alzheimer's Association, www.alz.org. For online condolences, please visit www.nickersonfunerals.com. Ronald H. Erickson, Longmeadow. Ronald H. Erickson of Longmeadow, formerly of Wilbraham, passed away on March 24th, 2024. Beloved husband of the late Marilyn A. Peck. Relatives and friends are invited to attend his funeral Thursday, April 4th at 10 a.m. at the United Church of Christ, 496 Main Street, Medfield. Interment in Woodland Dell Cemetery, Wilbraham, at 2:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations to the Alzheimer's Association of Massachusetts would be appreciated. For obituary and guestbook, please visit www.folsomfuneral.com. There is also one death notice in today's Cape Cod Times. Donald E. Reynolds, age 82, of Harwichport, Massachusetts, passed away March 23, 2024. The service location is Doan, Beale, and Ames. The service time is May 4th at 1 p.m. And now we'll continue the story that we were reading prior to the obituaries. That story is entitled Zoning Leniency Obligation for Raised for Proposed Family Shelter. The team behind the proposal said it believes it already has approval under the Dover Amendment from the Town Building Commissioner. Foley said town council's advice was that the proposal is, quote, likely, end quote, exempt. What is the education component? Attorney Peter Freeman, representing Housing Assistance Corporation, said the shelter will focus on serving families, mostly single mothers with infants and children. Planned educational services will be comprised of workshops, case management services, and other programs focusing on topics such as financial management, family planning, mass health enrollment, searching for housing, parenting, and cooking skills, said Freeman. Participation in the programs is mandatory, said Freeman. The whole point is to learn life skills, to become independent, so they will be able to move on from the facility to their own independent living, he said. The average stay at Housing Assistance's existing shelters is about 9 months. There's no maximum stay, but it is rare to be over 3 years, according to the agency. The state typically places residents within 20 miles of their community or schools. What is the shelter housing going to be like? Rooms will have a maximum of 3 people, unless one is a toddler. Otherwise, families with 4 or more people will have 2 rooms. The rooms are 272 square feet. Most rooms have a half bathroom and no televisions or chairs. It is intentional. It is by design. There is a level of security and comfort that we provide to the families, but there's also a level of discomfort so people will move on, said Magnata. There will be communal commercial kitchens, and families will have a refrigerator and microwave in their rooms. Each bedroom has a toilet and sink, but not a bath or shower. Case managers will be on site, and staff will not live on the property. The units are not eligible to be counted as part of the town's subsidized housing inventory. The inventory is a measure of low or moderate income housing under a state law intended to encourage affordable housing development. Housing Assistance Corporation also plans for a small playground and possibly a ball court and picnic area. The site also has 122 parking spots, but a traffic impact assessment found only 35 spaces will be needed for this use, according to the presentation made to the planning board. Cape Cod Regional Transit Authority will provide on-call service, and Housing Assistance also provides its own vans at other shelters. Reaction from Planning Board members. Planning Board member Rick Hamlin said he would be more comfortable if the team came before the board with a formal site plan review, because he believes there are too many unknowns related to the project. Freeman said that site plan reviews are not appropriate under the Dover Amendment. Hamlin and other members also said they wanted more in-depth information about the educational services planned for the site. The crux of the Dover Amendment, before we can even get to our purview, is providing to us the educational and religious components, and we have not been provided that, That's the difficulty I find myself in, and I believe other members of my board are finding themselves in, is that before we can even get to our part of the project, we haven't even seen that it's been met to our satisfaction, said board member Elizabeth Patterson. On April 2nd, the Cape Cod Commission sent a letter to Dennis Building Commissioner Paul Fowler, saying that because both the former nursing home and proposed shelter are residential uses, the project does not constitute a change of use that would trigger a mandatory referral as a development of regional impact. Nursing home sold in September. 1 Love Lane South Dennis, LLC, sold the 128-bed facility, known as South Dennis Healthcare, to Housing Assistance Corporation for $4.3 million, according to a deed recorded with the Barnstable County Registry of Deeds on September 28th. South Dennis Healthcare was operated by Woburn-based Next Step Healthcare. Magnata has previously said the facility would not be used for migrant housing, but rather to address the housing crisis faced by Cape Cod residents. And the picture that goes with this story is of a meeting, and the caption reads, Dennis Planning Board members and town officials listen Monday to a Housing Assistance Corporation presentation on a centralized family transition shelter planned at 1 Love Lane in South Dennis. And next we'll go to a Massachusetts state story that is on the front page of today's Cape Cod Times. That story is entitled, Pandemic Liquor Outdoor Dining Rules Lapse, by Chris Lisinski, Statehouse News Service. This week's dismal weather forecast might actually have a silver lining for some restaurateurs. After nearly 4 years with a streamlined system in place to permit outdoor dining and permission to sell takeout alcohol drinks, both practices lapsed Monday as the calendar flipped to April. Lawmakers are still figuring out what measures to keep around, and that work has cruised past the March 31st expiration date, rendering the pandemic-era policies popular in some corners, at least temporarily kaput. The sluggish legislative pace leaves some restaurants who were able to seat diners outside on Sunday unable to do so Monday, and Bay Staters of all stripes no longer able to pick up a pre-made mixed drink from their favorite neighborhood watering hole, like they might have over the weekend, according to Massachusetts Restaurant Association President Steve Clark. Thankfully, this week, the weather doesn't look great, Clark said. I think the conversations will be a little more urgent from our perspective if it was an 80-degree day, or if we were going to have a bunch of really nice days. But the fact that the weather this week is not going to be great, people that need it aren't going to be screaming for outdoor dining. The outdoor dining change, first implemented in an executive order from former Governor Charlie Baker and later enacted in state law, simplified the process for cities and towns to approve where alcohol and food can be served outside the licensed premises. Without the language on the books, restaurateurs face the longer, more traditional licensing process to get permission to expand outdoors, which involves the municipality and the Alcoholic Beverages Control Commission. Many restaurants already went through the effort of securing permanent authorization for their expanded outdoor dining, Clark said. But those who did not will lose the ability without additional legislative action. He added that, quote, less than a majority, but more than a subset, end quote, of restaurants will be affected. Although his members are hopeful the outdoor dining reforms and takeout drinks will soon return, Clark said he does not sense much frustration aimed at Beacon Hill among the industry. I think most restaurants are just saying, hey, I just need to know the landscape that I need to operate under. What is legal? What is not? I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm committing a violation, Clark said. We need clarity of what the law is. We sell a regulated product, and we need to know what the regulations are. The House and Senate are both on board with making the outdoor dining licensing reforms permanent. Where they differ is on takeaway alcohol and the emergency family shelter reforms that headline the bills in question. In the House, representatives voted in favor of a spending bill that would make takeout drinks permanent, while senators left the topic untouched, effectively signaling they would prefer to let it expire. Senator Jake Oliveira of Ludlow filed an amendment that would have added permanent authorization for the pandemic-era program, but he withdrew the proposal without debate or seeking a vote. The Massachusetts Package Store Association has been vocally campaigning against the takeout drinks policy, alleging that it has morphed from a way to relieve pressure early in the public health emergency into a threat to retail sales with few guardrails. Rob Mellian, the group's executive director, said Monday that his group is most concerned about the sale of large quantities of alcohol to go, especially by distilleries and breweries. We're talking about $400, $500 worth of alcohol in one order. That's what the stores have a problem with, Mellian said. It's not a Mai Tai and a pizza that has stores upset. And when I say stores, it's not just liquor stores. I'm tired of that soundbite of the Restaurant Association because it's false. It's the independent markets. It's the convenience stores. It's the package stores. It's all of them. The entire retail tier is upset about it. Mellian thanked senators for declining to take up another extension or permanent authorization for takeout drinks, suggesting that the chamber, quote, opened up doors that we could actually inject some reason, end quote. We are open to compromise. The problem is that no one's been willing to compromise, he said. It's just been trying to run us over. The lapsed authorization is the latest entry in what's become an occasional occurrence on Beacon Hill. In 2021, Baker signed a law keeping expanded outdoor dining and to-go drinks in place roughly 33 hours after the practices expired at the end of the COVID-19 state of emergency. The legislature has also been slow to extend authorization for horse racing and simulcasting, at times rendering the industry temporarily illegal. A conference committee tasked with crafting a final shelter and pandemic policies bill convened its first meeting Monday, where lawmakers quickly moved to continue their deliberations behind closed doors. We have some obviously important pieces in there that are of immediate need. And I know we share a desire to see this get to the governor's desk as soon as we can, said House Ways and Means Committee Chair Aaron Miklovitz. Until they reach agreement and get Governor Maura Healey to sign off on the final product, restaurants and alcohol sellers will return to the pre-pandemic status quo. Healey also endorsed permanently enshrining the ability for bars, restaurants, and other establishments to sell beer, wine, and cocktails to go, including a similar proposal in a municipal reform bill she filed in January. It's up to the legislature now, Healey said Monday when asked for her opinion on takeout drinks. I know they're in conference now, so we'll see what comes out of it, and I'll review what gets to my desk. I've supported it generally, but I know there's a difference of opinion on it, so I think that's up to the policymakers to sort out, she added. And now we'll go to a story related to the economy. That story is entitled Study. Inflation Sends Retirement Forecasts Soaring by Medora Lee, USA Today. Inflation has crept into every part of Americans' lives, including how much they now think they need to retire comfortably. A record $1.46 million, a study released on Tuesday said. That's a 53% surge since the $951,000 target Americans reported in 2020, and a 15% increase from last year's $1.27 million, according to Northwestern Mutual's 2024 Planning and Progress Study, which polled 4,588 adults in January. The jump hasn't spurred Americans to save more, though. The average amount that U.S. adults have saved for retirement dropped modestly to $88,400 from $89,300 in 2023. But that is more than $10,000 off the five-year peak of $98,800 in 2021, the study said. The dip in savings brings the gap between what people think they need for retirement and what they've saved to $1.3 million. People's magic number to retire comfortably has exploded to an all-time high, and the gap between their goals and progress has never been wider, said Aditi Javeri Gokhale, Chief Strategy Officer, President of Retail Investments, and Head of Institutional Investments at Northwestern Mutual. Inflation is expanding our expectations for retirement savings. Every generation shows a large gap between what its members believe they need for a comfortable retirement and the reality of what they have saved as of today, the studies show. Gen Z expects it'll need $1.63 million for retirement, but has only saved $22,800 on average, a $1.61 million gap. Millennials think they need $1.65 million, but have only saved $62,600 on average, a $1.5 million gap. Gen X forecasts it will need $1.56 million, but has saved on average $108,600, a $1.45 million gap. Boomers predict they'll need $990,000, but they've saved $120,300 on average, an $870,000 gap. Even high net wealth people registered a wide gap. They expect they'll need $3.93 million to fund their lifestyle in retirement, but on average only have $172,100 saved, the study said. This has been Carolyn reading to you from the Cape Cod Times on Wednesday, April 3rd. I wish you all a wonderful day.